Their relations with the dwindling empire of Constantinople remained for some centuries tolerantly hostile. They made no attack upon the Bosphorus, but they got a footing in Europe at the Dardanelles. And using this route, the route of Xerxes, not the route of Darius, they pushed their way steadily into Macedonia, Epirus, Illyria, Yugoslavia, and Bulgaria. In the Serbs, Yugoslavs, and Bulgarians, the Turks found people very like themselves in culture, and, though neither side recognized it, probably very similar in racial admixture, with a little less of the dark Mediterranean and Mongolian strains than the Turks, and a trifle more of the Nordic element. But these Balkan peoples were Christians and bitterly divided among themselves. The Turks, on the other hand, spoke one language. They had a greater sense of unity. They had the Muslim habits of temperance and frugality, and they were, on the whole, better soldiers. They converted what they could of the conquered people to Islam. The Christians they disarmed and conferred upon them the monopoly of tax-paying. Gradually, the Ottoman princes consolidated an empire that reached from the Taurus Mountains in the east to Hungary and Romania in the west. Adrianople became their chief city. They surrounded the shrunken empire of Constantinople on every side. The Ottomans organized a standing military force, the Janissaries, rather on the lines of the Mamluks, who dominated Egypt. These troops were formed of levies of Christian youths to the extent of 1,000 per annum, who were affiliated to the Bektashi order of dervishes, and though at first not obliged to embrace Islam, were one and all strongly imbued with the mystic and fraternal ideas of the confraternity to which they were attached. Highly paid, well-disciplined, a close and jealous secret society, the Janissaries provided the newly formed Ottoman state with a patriotic force of trained infantry soldiers, which in an age of light cavalry and hired companies of mercenaries was an invaluable asset. The relations between the Ottoman sultans and the emperors has been singular in the annals of Muslim and Christian states. The Turks had been involved in the family and dynastic quarrels of the imperial city, were bound by ties of blood to the ruling families, frequently supplied troops with the defense of Constantinople, and on occasion hired parts of its garrison to assist them in their various campaigns. The sons of the emperors and Byzantine statesmen even accompanied the Turkish forces in the field, yet the Ottomans never ceased to annex imperial territories and cities both in Asia and Thrace. This curious intercourse between the House of Osman and the imperial government had a profound effect on both institutions. The Greeks grew more and more debased and demoralized by the shifts and tricks that their military weakness obliged them to adopt towards their neighbors. The Turks were corrupted by the alien atmosphere of intrigue and treachery which crept into their domestic life. Fratricide and parricide, the two crimes which most frequently stained the annals of the imperial palace, eventually formed a part of the policy of the Ottoman dynasty. One of the sons of Murad I embarked on an intrigue with Andronicus, the son of the Greek emperor, to murder their respective fathers. The Byzantine found it more easy to negotiate with the Ottoman Pasha than with the Pope. For years the Turks and Byzantines had intermarried and hunted in couples in strange bypaths of diplomacy. The Ottoman had played the Bulgar and the Serb of Europe against the emperor, just as the emperor had played the Asiatic emir against the sultan. The Greek and Turkish royal princes had mutually agreed to hold each other's rivals as prisoners and hostages. In fact, Turk and Byzantine policy had so intertwined that it's difficult to say whether the Turks regarded the Greeks as their allies, enemies, or subjects, or whether the Greeks looked upon the Turks as their tyrants, destroyers, or protectors. It was in 1453, under the Ottoman Sultan Mohammed II, that Constantinople at last fell to the Muslims. he attacked it from the European side, and with a great power of artillery the Greek emperor was killed, and there was much looting and massacre. The great church of St. Sophia, which Justinian the Great had built in 532, was plundered of its treasures and turned at once into a mosque. This event sent a wave of excitement throughout Europe, and an attempt was made to organize a crusade, but the days of the crusade were past. Says Sir Mark Sykes, "To the Turks the capture of Constantinople was a crowning mercy and yet a fatal blow. Constantinople had been the tutor and polisher of the Turks. So long as the Ottomans could draw science, learning, philosophy, art, and tolerance from a living fountain of civilization in the heart of their dominions, so long had the Ottomans not only brute force but intellectual power. So long as the Ottoman Empire had in Constantinople a free port, a market, a center of world finance, a pool of gold, an exchange, so long did the Ottomans never lack for money and financial support. Mohammed was a great statesman. The moment he entered Constantinople, he endeavored to stay the damage his ambition had done. He supported the patriarch, he conciliated the Greeks, he did all he could to continue Constantinople the city of the emperors. But the fatal step had been taken. Constantinople, as the city of the sultans, was Constantinople no more. The markets died away, the culture and civilization fled, the complex finance faded from sight, and the Turks had lost their governors and their support. On the other hand, the corruptions of Byzantium remained, the bureaucracy, the eunuchs, the palace guards, the spies, the bribers, go-betweens, all these the Ottomans took over, and all these survived in luxuriant life. The Turks, in taking Stamboul, let slip a treasure and gained a pestilence." Mohammed's ambition wasn't sated by the capture of Constantinople. He set his eyes also upon Rome. He captured and looted the Italian town of Otranto, and it's probable that a very vigorous and perhaps successful attempt to conquer Italy, for the peninsula was divided against itself, was averted only by his death in 1481. His sons engaged in fratricidal strife. Under Bayezid II, 1481-1512, his successor, war was carried into Poland, and most of Greece was conquered. Selim, 1512-1520, the son of Bayezid, extended the Ottoman power over Armenia and conquered Egypt. In Egypt, the last Abbasid caliph was living under the protection of the Mamluk sultan, for the Fatimite caliphate was a thing of the past. Selim bought the title of caliph from this last degenerate Abbasid, and acquired the sacred banner and other relics of the Prophet. So the Ottoman sultan became also caliph of all Islam. Selim was followed by Suleiman the Magnificent, 1520-1566, who conquered Baghdad in the east and the greater part of Hungary in the west, and very nearly captured Vienna. His fleets also took Algiers and inflicted a number of reverses upon the Venetians. In most of his warfare with the empire, he was in alliance with the French. Under him, the Ottoman power reached its zenith. Fifth, let's now very briefly run over the subsequent development of the main masses of the empire of the Great Khan. In no case did Christianity succeed in capturing the imagination of these Mongol states. Christianity was in a phase of moral and intellectual insolvency, without any collective faith, energy, or honour. We've told of the wretched brace of timid Dominicans, which was the Pope's reply to the appeal of Kublai Khan, and we've noted the general failure of the overland missions of the 13th and 14th centuries. That apostolic passion that could win whole nations to the kingdom of heaven was dead in the Church. In 1305, as we've told, the Pope became the kept pontiff of the French king. All the craft and policy of the popes of the 13th century to oust the emperor from Italy had only served to let in the French to replace him. From 1305 to 1377 the popes remained at Avignon, and such slight missionary effort as they made was merely a part of the strategy of Western European politics.